Hi, Allison Dunn, owner of Deliberate Directions, your business executive coach. Today on our podcast, we have Hazen Armstrong with us. He is the owner of Robbins and Armstrong based out of Eagle, Idaho. And I've got a quick little bio for you. So we have brought Hazen in to talk to us about 2019 tax season tips for small business owners. And Hazen is a graduate of BSU, degree in 2011, and while he was in school, he founded All Turf LLC, and you ran that for 7 years. So this is one of the particular things that I think makes you a very relatable CPA, not that most aren't, but that you come from the entrepreneurial side of things.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about that before I dive and drill you for all of these CPA questions.
Sure, of course. So my original degree was in marketing, and that was my world. I lived in Seattle for a lot of years, and when we moved to Boise, 07, market was not what it was the prior 2 years, so there just weren't many jobs to be had. So I started up All Turf, and that was... we did sprinkler and chemical work. Was really purely, it was tried to keep it really simple. There was just a couple of us, and built that up and sold it, and used those experiences, those frustrations, dealing with CPAs, lawyers, and all of that through that process to parlay that into, I think I can maybe do this a little bit better, maybe speak a little bit more plainly and understandable and relatable to business owners, so that they don't have to make the same mistakes that I made and really got frustrated with. So that's what landed me to dive out of the marketing world and into accounting, so I went back to BSU.
Fantastic. Well, it's a switch from working with your hands, right?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. There was actually 2 years where I was probably the only guy, maybe in the country, that could blow out your sprinklers and take care of your tax return in the same year. So not many of us.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Of course.
So knowing that we were speaking today, I reached out to a couple of my clients and asked them to send in some questions. And then I have common questions that I always get. So I'm just going to toss these at you. So.
Love it.
I think the biggest question that I have for today is, what are the biggest mistakes that small business owners make when it comes to just accounting in general?
Yeah, great question. And I can spend probably more time than we have addressing that one. But first and foremost, our biggest frustration is trying to engage with business owners that are, they're busy and they aren't willing to or haven't ever felt enough pain to carve out time to spend on their business to think about the tax ramifications or have conversations. But the people that that just say, my CPA's got it, and they throw their hands in the air and say, I don't know anything about taxes, those are the people that pay more in taxes every time. And that's not a very fun position to be in when you're working really hard to engage business owners, get information so you can help them make decisions. Mm-hmm. So just, I think, carving out time on a monthly basis to spend on your accounting, to spend on your bookkeeping, to free up time to ask questions to your CPA, I think is, you will be shocked at how much money you'll save, and quite honestly, how much time you'll save when it comes to, instead of doing the triage model in tax season, trying to pull all the bits and pieces together for your CPA at the last minute. You know, all that's been done. We know what you're going to owe in April by the end of the year. So it makes that process less stressful and so much more efficient, both from a CPA's perspective and from the business owner's perspective.
So it's interesting that you bring that up, is that I find that we spend, as a business owner and working with business owners, is we spend a lot of time worrying about what we're supposed to do. We spend a lot of time shuffling things around to try to be prepared, as opposed to just asking the experts.
Absolutely. And it's really a pet peeve of mine that that we've been kind of conditioned by CPAs, and I hate to throw my own industry under the bus here, but I really feel like the model that they've pushed us all into is, we don't talk to my CPA until it's tax season. I don't reach out because I'm afraid, am I going to get a bill? I'm afraid, well, they're probably out golfing anyway, so I can't reach out to them in June. But that is the opposite of what should happen. I really try hard to encourage clients to reach out in June, July, August, whatever it is, so that we can get those topics addressed when they're on your mind, so you don't lose any sleep over them for the next 6 months waiting to hear from your CPA, and that's really inefficient. I would love to address those things as they come up, if that makes any sense.
So when working with clients, it's about usually the third quarter of every year that I say, okay, where are you this year or last year, and have you booked your meeting with your CPA?
Yeah.
So just for kind of high-level things, that's a conversation that we've recently had. Mm-hmm. And so maybe we could touch on some of the highlight things that you are giving guidance to your typical business owner.
Right.
Of what can I do between now and the end of the year?
Sure.
That are logical things that we should automatically be thinking about.
Yeah, every single year there are the same things that don't change. Obviously, there are a few nuances with whether or not you're an S corporation mm-hmm. or not, and whether we need to establish that wage and how much withholding should be associated with that. But taking it, going one step simpler, we really have to focus on those tax saving strategies first and foremost. And we always start with the things that don't require the cash being shipped off. So if you can take cash from one pocket, put it in a different pocket, and get a tax savings, so things like 401ks, HSAs, IRAs, MSAs, 529 plans, the list is pretty large on those things that we focus on first, because you get to keep your own money and you get a tax savings. The next layer is, what are our projected 2020 expenses that we can think of, and should we buy them now? What does 2020 budgets look like? So, you know, we try to project out. We're always working at two tax years at the same time.
Right.
We're thinking about the current year and we're thinking about the next year as well. Do we want to accelerate those expenses and as a result, accelerate about a year's worth of tax savings? So that's really the kind of the beginning stretch, and then we dive into the minutia of everybody's wages and any wholesale changes we want to make to the company.
Okay, yeah. Great tips. The next question is, what are the two most important things for an entrepreneur to be doing accounting-wise to ensure success long-term?
Yeah.
So not the spend it all so that you don't have any profits.
Yep.
So can you speak to that?
Two things. What was the question? Two things that we can do to ensure long-term success. I'm going to hammer it again because it just doesn't get enough attention, in my opinion. Spend time, figure out a routine, and stay up on that routine. Mm-hmm. That has ramifications all the way down through your business. So if it's a monthly basis, if it's a weekly basis, it doesn't really matter. As long as it's a routine, you will save more in taxes, and you will set yourself up for success in the business from just a financials perspective, because you'll be focusing on those small little, you'll identify those costs that are maybe an overrun that if you glossed over it and you didn't address it for 6 months, then it's already long and that money's just gone at that point. So that was one thing. Two things that an entrepreneur can do to ensure success, I think it would be putting together a team that interfaces with each other. So in large corporations, in the Apples and the Microns of the world, we have COOs, we have CFOs, we've got CEOs, right? In our small businesses, that doesn't exist. So we need to kind of fill in those positions and those roles, find people with the strengths that you're looking for, find people that you trust, and allow them to talk behind your back. Because that's a good thing. Because, you know, if we have a financial advisor and you meet with your financial advisor in the third quarter, and I'm about to meet with you in the fourth quarter to talk about taxes, the first thing I'm going to do is reach out and find out how that third quarter meeting went with your financial advisor, see if there are any updates there. And that way we've got a game plan already set up. So it's less work if you allow the professionals in your life to kind of communicate without you and get the ball rolling on your behalf.
Do you find that that's a common strategy or an uncommon?
It's underutilized. Everybody has those players in their world. I think they just haven't quite put it together that all is related and that all needs to happen in one kind of cohesive strategy. And if the financial advisor and the estate planning attorney and the CPA are all executing different strategies without communicating, it's not going to result in a positive outcome.
Good point. So, new tax laws.
Yeah.
95% of U.S. businesses are small businesses, so they're either S-Corps, LLCs, or sole proprietors.
Correct, yep.
What are the impacts for the new tax cuts, if there are any?
Sure. There's all kinds of impacts. The easiest one to talk about is the new 20% qualified business income deduction. Every business owner got that, and it's really a response to the what brought on the tax change in the first place. The Apples and the Microns of the world, those C corporations, their top tax bracket went from 35% down to 21% as part of this tax legislation. And that was the first kind of negotiating part when Congress started debating this tax bill. And then the inevitable came, you know, this other 95% of the business world said, wait. So we're giving C Corps 14% tax deduction, tax savings. What's in it for the rest of us? And that 20% qualified business income deduction is just really, really impactful. And it changes the paradigm on so many potential opportunities. In my mind, there's no better time to be self-employed. There used to be a time in America where I think it was you were in the right spot, the right place. If you found that career and you found that corporation that valued you and you were an employee for 30 years and you got to retire with that company and they had, you know, defined benefit plans and all that fun, beautiful stuff, health insurance was paid for. As we all know, there's been an erosion of all of those things, and this is just one more of those knocks. Through the tax legislation, we also lost for W-2 employees what would be called unreimbursed employee expenses, meaning that there was another W-2, another kind of knock in the con of being a con column of being a W-2 employee. And so I just really feel like that 20% deduction is enough. If you've had that dream of starting up a small business or that idea, that's enough of an incentive to really revisit that and think about that.
I like that.
Cool.
Basically the tax year is kind of set in stone for this year.
Yep.
Are you, is there anything that we should be aware of that you know is coming down the pike?
Yeah, well, Congress is preoccupied at the moment. So, and that's actually a really big problem. And within tax legislation, there is these once a year deductions that every single year Congress will re-up. They're called extenders, and there's somewhere between 10 and 20 that for the last 15 years or so, Congress every year routinely has extended these. Well, they didn't do that last year. So, for example, things like the residential energy improvement deduction. When you buy new windows or new doors at your house or a new AC system, there was always a deduction there. Well, Congress decided not to extend that. They keep saying that they're going to get to it. The reality is the technical corrections that need to happen to the tax law, these extender bills, they're just not getting addressed. And it's regardless of anybody's political preference, that's the reality of the situation that we're in right now is there isn't these everyday type routine things that Congress normally would address just aren't getting done.
With that said, is there any new best opportunity to save money?
Yeah, one fun, exciting one that in a super nerdy way that I really like is, and it's not getting much press, and I think there's the ramifications are kind of endless here, but we've got this 20% deduction that applies to trades or businesses that encompasses the partnerships, the S-Corps, the LLC, the sole proprietors, everybody. Outside of that, this tax law carved out rental real estate income as also qualified for that 20% deduction. It's a massive departure from anything else that the IRS or the federal government has given us guidance. This is passive income. This is investment income, and always has historically been treated that way in the tax code, outside of this one little instance where rental income, passive income, it gets treated as it qualifying for this 20% business income deduction, which I find fascinating just from a theory level. But also, it's a great opportunity. I think we're advocating for maybe thinking about being a small business owner or starting up that business. But also, I think it's just another tick in the column of rental real estate is a great way to diversify your portfolio, and even more so now with that 20% deduction. It's just not talked about enough.
Right.
Yeah.
20%.
20%. Yep.
So let's talk about preparation of taxes.
Sure.
One of my clients is asking that there's a huge number of freelance workers in the U.S., and this person happens to also be a freelancer. So that's a shift. Often freelancers moving from unemployment or coming new into the marketplace.
Yeah.
So have you helped them prepare their taxes, and what kind of businesses are they running?
Yep. These are traditionally service-based businesses that, and we, yes, our firm helps well, these would be called, you know, the tax code would be called independent contractors, right. Freelancers. Mm-hmm. It's the same exact, those are synonyms, and there's a lot of synonyms in the tax code that get thrown out, and that it kind of confuses everybody, and that's okay. But additionally, once you receive that 1099, which is the departure from being a W-2 employee, the shift all of a sudden becomes a focus on every possible expense that you can use to offset against that income. Mm-hmm. Because that income, as every freelancer knows, that first year you file that tax return, that self-employment tax comes up and bites you. So we got our federal income tax, our state income tax. Everybody knows and loves all of those. Those are easy to, we all understand that. But then once you become self-employed, you're paying your portion of Social Security and Medicare and your employer's portion of Social Security and Medicare. 15.3%, that adds
50.3, and then yeah. What do they have to take into account on the state side?
On the state side is another, it's just 7.4, okay. so there's no additional state taxes for being self-employed.
Okay.
So if you have $40,000 in freelance income, the big departure is you didn't really care about expenses as an employee. You didn't really keep track of those, but it goes back to that record-keeping routine. And I always encourage people that in their first year of going down this path of becoming self-employed, becoming a freelancer, the first year is all about just gathering as much information as we can. And I tell people to put maybe an Excel file on your desktop that is your what about this list of things. So as you're going throughout the year and as something's on your brain, just put it on that list and we'll address it at tax season. So, because there's so many things and you don't realize, hey, I bought this computer 2 years ago for personal use, not a deduction, but now I'm using it in my business. Right. What about this? Can we capture that? And the answer is yeah. And often those times, those things get forgotten. It's only the things that we directly correlate with owning a business that we directly spent money on. So we got to broaden our brain just a little bit and try to pick up everything that's related to that business. Anything that you're using to produce this income needs to be an expense. And we need to figure out a way to get it there.
The question I get is, I say, you know, bring your financials, let's pull your P&L, bring mm-hmm. your balance sheet, let's look at your month to date,
yeah.
and they go cash or accrual?
Yeah.
And my question always is, well, which one do you operate on?
Sure,
right?
Sure.
And they go, I don't know.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
So it makes it hard, and then I have to look at both. So
yes.
Why and when?
Yes. Okay. So the short answer is you make that decision on your first tax return once you're self-employed. You are given the option to select, am I going to be an accrual basis taxpayer or cash basis taxpayer? For financials, when I look at any financial, I will always ask for the accrual basis financial statements. And the reason being is there are so many opportunities to make an error, unknowingly making an error within your QuickBooks file, and that is much easier to throw off your cash basis financials. So QuickBooks doesn't handle it very well because when you are running a cash basis financial out of QuickBooks and maybe your invoice in one particular client wasn't set up quite right and it just won't account for it properly. So if we look at accrual basis, we know that that'll capture everything. And for example, if we're doing a cash basis taxpayer, I'll start with the accrual financials, start there always, and then I'll make an accrual to cash conversion so that I can come up with the numbers on the tax return. I'll never just pull a cash basis financial and use that information for the tax return. I think now, when does a person want to be cash or accrual on their tax return? I think if there is any, well, it's more of when you want to recognize that income. So it's December 30th, you're about ready to, you finished a job and you're about ready to invoice this client. It's your first year and it's a $40,000 invoice. Do you want to pay the tax on that $40,000 this year or next year? And sometimes it's as simple as that.
Right.
We want to record that income in the year we receive it. So we get to defer that income to the next tax year by saying we want to be a cash basis. If the opposite is true and you've got a bunch of expenses, you know, oftentimes you want to be an accrual basis taxpayer and recognize those expenses in the current year, even though you haven't forked out the cash. So there's no right answer for everybody.
Right.
It's really, hey, as we wrap up this first year, what does the next 3 years look like for you and you know, the timing of everything. So does that answer your question?
That absolutely answers
Great.
My question.
Yep.
And it lent me a tip because I run a cash basis and I couldn't understand why I wasn't seeing an invoice, and it was because it was just dated wrong.
Yep. Right. Gotcha.
So it was outside,
yep.
outside yep. the period, and I'm like,
yep.
where is it?
Yep.
It was paid. Like, I don't know where it went.
Yeah,
so
real common
that
problem.
That would have helped me.
Yes,
for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
the craze of the Profit First book has really educated people to talk about finances in a way that I think most people just kind of glaze over.
Yep.
But what it's also done is it's really given people somewhat of a structure to be able to start to save for taxes as well. But it's complicated.
Yep.
So how can you uncomplicate? How do you save for taxes specifically? Because we're talking about taxes. So let's keep it on that.
Yeah, no, it's
we're all about profits.
It's a very big one of those I absolutely love about that philosophy and that theory is, first and foremost, we have to earmark money for the known expenses. And taxes are a known expense. In fact, they're the biggest known expense of all of our lifetimes. So so that warrants savings, and that warrants a lot of attention as you earn money. It can't ever be an afterthought. So every dollar that comes in the business, I think it's a little bit of a different percentage for everybody, and there's a little learning curve, just like withholding on a W-2. Mm-hmm. You get to the end of the year and you think, I am getting a $7,000 refund. That was not in my best interest. I had way too much withheld. Same can be said for the Profit First model and coming up with a fixed percentage to put into that tax savings bucket every single month. That is great, but it may result, it's gonna be an iterative process. Every year you're gonna get a little bit more refined with what that process looks like. And some years I'm gonna come in and we're gonna come up with 6 or 7 tax strategies to implement, and we're gonna blow that entirely up. That tax savings bucket is now not needed. Now we've got your net income down to 0 in your business, and that tax savings bucket for that year can either just carry forward or we can deploy it in other ways.
Right.
Yeah.
So kind of a slight diversion. So let's talk about profit now.
Yep.
When I think about how to guide people when they're trying to grow, they're maybe looking for lines of credit.
Yep.
They need to show profitability inside of their business.
Absolutely.
But there's a fine line. I mean, I believe everyone should pay taxes if you're doing well.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. That's a sign of a super healthy business. What's the ratio? Like, what is your guidance on...
Sure. Yeah, when to recognize income and...
Exactly.
Yeah. So we have to keep always... We're always thinking 3 or 4 years down the road, and financing is a huge play.
Mm-hmm.
We have to... While you may be able to take every single possible deduction we have coming to you, and we may accelerate depreciation on a big piece of equipment, and we drive your income all the way to zero, that may completely mess up another picture, your financial picture, your ability to get a line of credit, your ability to buy a house. All of those things can be impacted by getting too aggressive. Not that you did anything wrong on your tax picture, your tax deductions, we just overplayed our hand a little bit. So first and foremost, the prevailing thought is never pay more in the year that we're in than we can possibly get you down to. So never pay more than that dollar. Now we have to keep in mind, this is where that full team environment goes. A banker is a great person to loop into those conversations, because what are your long-term financing needs? And if you have that person established, I need to have a conversation with them. Your CPA needs to have a conversation. What are your retirement plans? As a business owner, that's your financial advisor. I need to know what those are, because it may fly completely in the face of what I'm trying to do, which is, if nobody says anything to me, I'm gonna save you every dollar I possibly can. That's always gonna be my default until somebody tells me differently. So that's information that has to get relayed to a CPA, and it has to happen 3 years in advance, really. I mean, most of the time, if we're talking about legitimate business lines of credit, that's a 3-year tax return scenario.
Right.
Yeah. We got to make sure that we've planned for that.
Okay. So let's talk about deductions.
Yep.
And opportunities for them.
Yeah.
I think my kids are too old, but you can hire your kids and shelter some money. So
absolutely.
I have clients who have children.
Yeah.
That are below the age. So what are the parameters and why and how do you do that?
I can nerd out on this one forever. This is a really favorite topic of mine. And I just caught an article that validated that, in that this is the most underutilized tax saving strategy in the IRS code. Hiring your children. So I have to be a little bit careful. You know, there's, you know, the whole child labor laws and all of that fun stuff. But the root of everything here is, first and foremost, we got to make sure that your child is legitimately working for your business. Mm-hmm. There has to be time cards. Obviously, this is something that we can abuse or gets abused quite frequently, and for good reason, because it's a great tax savings. But we have to make sure if the kid's working in the business, they have a time card, we document what they did, they get a formal W-2, just like any other employee, so that when we're sitting across from an IRS agent, we can say, here were their job duties, here was their job description, mm-hmm. on and on and on. It just bolsters that case. So now what can we do? So we've got, until they're age 18, if you are an LLC, you not an S corporation, but an LLC, you are allowed to pay your child up until age 18, and no Social Security or Medicare is withheld from their paycheck. So if you pay them $10,000, they get an exact paycheck for $10,000. They're not going to owe any tax on their end, because they're below that $12,000 standard deduction, which is part of the new tax law. So if you pay them $10,000, they pay zero tax, absolutely zero. And in the business, that's a $10,000 deduction. Using round numbers, about a 30% savings. You saved $3,000. They put $10,000 in their pocket, can be used for school clothes, shopping, tuition, you know, all the way down the pipe. Now, I can even take it one step further if you want to get super nerdy. We can take that money and we can fund, now that child has earned income. And that makes them eligible to be funding a Roth IRA. And I ran the numbers recently for a person, if you pay a kid $5,000, from age 8 to 18, $50,000 outlay, that's about a $15,000 tax savings, mm-hmm. for the business owner over that time period. And the kid doesn't touch the money, it goes right into a Roth IRA. If we wait until 59 and a half to start pulling that money out, assuming a 7% rate of return, which is pretty conservative, that's tax-free money to the tune of $1.8 million for that child. That's powerful. That is, I love Roth IRAs. I love Roth IRAs for young people. And if you don't want to go that route, if you don't want to wait until 59 and a half, that Roth IRA money can be used for college. Mm-hmm. That Roth IRA money can be used for the first home purchase, some medical expenses. There's a few carve outs. So there's incredible opportunities. While I love 529 plans, and we can talk about that a little bit later, but I think this is a great opportunity for business owners, and it's just missed. It's just missed too much.
I missed the boat on that one. And I just want to, so they're actually working in the business, they're keeping a time card. Mm-hmm. What are some of the roles and responsibilities you've seen children have?
Yep. I think office cleaning is the most common one.
Okay.
My son helped me with a little data entry on Excel spreadsheets. He's 10, so that was a big help over the summer. He helped me roll forward a bunch of pieces of software that we had. I think real estate agents a lot use children in their businesses, whether it's helping set up for an open house, getting signs put up, checking on rental properties within the family. And that kind of leads me down another tangent, if you don't mind. Oftentimes we see this scenario where a family has a number of assets within their household, mm-hmm. whether it's a couple rental properties, maybe a large brokerage account that's managed. There could be any number of things. There could be some inheritance that needs to be managed. And really, in that case, I think it warrants, if there's one particular parent that is managing all of that, it may warrant having an LLC. And you can treat it as what's kind of known as a family management LLC. And through that mechanism, maybe we can pay that spouse that has not been receiving any Social Security benefits. In other words, they haven't had a history of income, so when it comes time to retire, they might not be eligible for Social Security. This is one way of getting that on the books. It's another way to, let's say, one spouse is working and already maxing out their 401k. This is another way to get more tax-deferred retirement money in. If we can have maybe a simple IRA within that family management LLC, and then we can hire kids, and we can have the Roth for them, and on and on and on. So, yeah.
A whole structure.
Yep, absolutely.
One of the things that when I started my business, I worked from home. So, yep. at what's the requirements around utilizing a home office?
Sure.
How's that work?
Yeah, home office. It's classic. Everybody loves to talk about it, but the reality is it's just not a massive tax deduction.
No.
We don't focus too much on it, but it is something that you always want to capture. The home office deduction is the space in your home that is used exclusively for business. There's no coats hanging in the closet. There's no spare bed in the room. This is a space that if an IRS agent walked in, they see nothing else outside of business documents, desks, chairs, all of that. Have I ever seen an IRS agent walk through somebody's house and look for that? No, and I'm not sure if that really is even really feasible anymore. We've got two agents here locally. Not that that should be abused, but at the same time, it's tough to kind of really follow that guideline. It's such a challenging guideline. But if you're committed to it, the rule is this. There's two options, two paths, as goes with most things in tax. It's a little bit complicated. There is the hard way, and I try to just make it the hard way. The hard path, right? So the hard path is we add up all of our utilities for the year. We add, home insurance, homeowners insurance, mortgage interest, property taxes, repairs, maintenance, painting the office, yada yada yada, and then we prorate all of those expenses based on square footage. So if we've got a 1,000 square foot house and 100 square foot home office, we get 10% of all of those expenses. Or we take $5 a square foot. And in my mind,
that's the easy way.
That's really easy. Yeah, we just find out what that square footage of that home office is, $5 a square foot, and we all move on. The IRS brought that out about 4 years ago just because nobody wants to look at utility bills and all that fun stuff. So
that's funny.
Yeah.
All right, so most underutilized deduction is the $12,000 child worker component.
Yep.
What's the next most underutilized deduction?
Good question. I would probably say one I already hit on, which is maximizing first and foremost all of those opportunities to save your own money.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of fear, sometimes justified, about equities and the stock market. And oh my goodness, yes, I'm saving money in a 401k, but it can all be gone tomorrow. While I understand that, there's a reason that we have financial advisors in our lives, because you want to not look at that from an emotional perspective. You want to look at it from purely a math perspective. And it's really challenging to do that for our own money that was really hard earned. So I'd encourage people to put maybe a barricade between themselves and the decisions of that retirement plan. But far too often, I feel like that fear drives people to not take advantage of the tax savings that are the most logical. We get to keep our own money and we get tax savings. I mean, how can we not start there? And oftentimes we focus on that next level where we're shipping off our money and getting a tax savings, but all the money's gone.
Right.
So yeah, first and foremost, let's keep our money in our pocket and get some tax savings.
Slightly different shift. So from a tax saving standpoint for small business, what are some of the employee fringe benefits that we can give them that are basically reduce our taxability but are a benefit and can be considered part of our compensation?
Yeah. Mileage, mileage reimbursement, health insurance, retirement packages. Health insurance is a very broad term that can be chopped up into a lot of different things. You can reimburse for the premiums. You could, and then you couldn't, and now you can again as part of the Affordable Care Act, so that now we're back to where you can just purely reimburse an employee for their health insurance premiums. That's really helpful. It makes it a lot easier rather than setting up a formal group plan, which is sometimes not even an option for business owners. It's just too expensive. What I would encourage, I think there's a I oftentimes hear business owners want to go straight, like 0 to 60 on employee benefits right off the bat. Yes, this is the type of business that I want to have. It's my vision when I started it up, and that might be great. And I love that philosophy, but at the same time, I feel like this is a bit of a trickle campaign. We, we have to be really strategic about how to deploy cash, because this one, in and of itself, sneaks up on us. Total employee cost, really can't, because there's 6 or 7 different places that really all lead into the total employee cost. It can be kind of daunting when you show a business owner, this is really what you paid this employee. It's not just their hourly rate, it's everything that goes into it. So I would encourage, before making employee benefit plan decisions, really have a very clear understanding of what you're committing yourself to and how that will impact your business, again, in that 3 to 5 year window. How many employees are we going to add? What are those ages going to be theoretically? And all the way down the road, we have to make sure that when we start that process, it's really hard to turn that faucet back off on your employees. Once they get that benefit, it's really tough to make it go away.
So we're going to Bali for our partners meeting.
Yeah,
sweet. Because that's where we should have it, right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so how does that qualify as a business expense, or how can I ensure that it does,
yep.
And what doesn't get included?
Sure.
Because we're going to Bali.
Yes, do it. Absolutely. And let's capture every dollar that you have coming to you in deductions. And the way the IRS gives us that deduction, because we, just like the kids, there is a great opportunity to abuse this deduction, and it gets abused all the time. Mm-hmm. People go on cruises, they call it their board meeting, what have you. So really, the reality is, if you're in Bali for 10 days, mm-hmm. and you, 4 of those days are at the partner retreat, and 6 of those days are either travel or vacation or sitting on the beach, what have you, you just prorate everything.
Okay.
So if you have lodging, airline, costs, all of those costs get put in one big pool, and we take that travel deduction for, what did I say, 4/10 of,
yeah.
4/10 of that trip. So I think if you wanted to be bulletproof, and I would encourage you to be bulletproof in the event of an audit in this case, I would have a journal of every day.
Okay.
While you were on the trip.
So agendas and then
yep.
your diary.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's how you can say, here were the 10 days in Bali, beach day, non-beach day, and we're down the road. So
okay.
You'd be much better positioned than just saying, whole thing, it was just a quarterly retreat, the whole thing was all business related, and that doesn't fly.
Okay. That's really good to know.
Yeah.
Oh, I got so into Bali that I've now lost my way on my own
questions.
That's
easy to do.
All right. So let's talk about what working with an accountant should be like.
Yeah.
So what information does a small business owner need to bring
mm-hmm.
to you to help you do your job best? And when should we know when we really need one?
Okay. It's a little bit predicated. I'm going to start with the second question
sure.
first. It's the when you should have a CPA. It's a little bit predicated on what that CPA charges. So you want to make sure that you're getting value. So if you are in the situation where you don't feel like you're getting answers to your questions, or those answers aren't understandable. And I think that's a really important piece. You may ask the question and you may get an answer, but did you walk away with clarity? And if you didn't walk away with clarity, what's the point? So first and foremost, whether you should hire a CPA, are you getting that value? Do you feel like the information you're getting is going to be valuable to you? So. But in our firm, we kind of have the adage that if you have a business, if you have a rental property, our pricing structure would mean that we're likely going to save you more than we're going to charge you.
Nice.
That's a goal of ours, is to always do that. Mm-hmm. Always take, if somebody's self-repairing, great, I saved you $3,000, here's your $400 bill. Hopefully that is what you were looking for. Now, I need to dive back into what was the first question here.
So what information do we need to bring in
yeah.
order to help you do your job?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first and foremost.
Is my shoebox good?
Shoebox, yeah. We get shoebox occasionally. but we have to all remember that this is a service-based industry. It's predicated, our billing is predicated on time. So if you bring in the shoebox, you're gonna pay more to get your tax return prepared. We're gonna have somebody in the back office going through your receipts one by one and adding them up. That's not what you want us to do. There are a lot of people that are great at adding up your expenses. If that's not for you, awesome. But it's also not for your CPA. That's not the appropriate place. And sometimes we're in that position because it's triage mode and it's April 14th and we just need to get it done. And that just results in a really big bill for that client. So I would say having right now this week I'm sending out emails to all business owners. Please send me your up-to-date financials through the end of October. Mm-hmm. I want to take a look at those, make sure you're trending where we thought you were going to be trending, and make sure we're deploying all possible tax strategies before the end of the year closes. And most people like to know what they're going to owe in April.
Right.
About Christmas time. It helps a little bit for that, that spending and all of that. So I would say having accessible information that's accessible year-round. We get asked questions all the time. Hey, should I spend money on this particular strategy? Should I buy this new vehicle? Should I buy this piece of equipment? Great, send me over your financials and let's figure it out. If the financials aren't there, then it makes it really challenging for us to do our job.
Right. In tax prep, I'm mm-hmm. sure one of the challenges is the commingling
mm-hmm.
or non-separation of business yep. funds versus personal funds.
Yes.
Do you have any recommendations?
Don't do it. Yes. So first, it's one of the, sorry. A little too simple. But the very first thing, if somebody comes to me and says, I want to start up a new business, great. Number one, let's get an LLC established. And then we've got, hopefully, a corporate veil in between our business assets and our personal assets. So if you commingle, if you, for example, make $10,000 on your first job as a freelance graphic designer, and you take that money and you go buy groceries, that LLC has just now been essentially deemed worthless. You've pierced the corporate veil. Now all of your business assets and all of your personal assets, it's all in one lump. So if that contract goes awry and you get sued, it doesn't matter that you have an LLC in place. They may come after your personal 401k. They may come after your home. That type of litigation is what we're trying to avoid. Secondly, from, and more importantly, because it affects me more, that's more the legal side, but from a CPA's perspective, the people that commingle and they spend money out of their personal, they have a couple different credit cards, they have the business account, a couple savings accounts. When they try to figure out what are their expenses and how essentially do their accounting for the year, mm-hmm. they pay too much in taxes. They miss things. They just, right. It's inherently, I guarantee that deductions are gonna get missed if you go that route. The more simplified we can go, if we can print out a business bank statement every single month and know that that's everything, that's it. That's so much more putting your mind at ease than trying to go through your personal account and try to find, oh, was that business? Was that, it's right. impossible. Yeah.
Do you have a preferred tool that you recommend people utilize for management of their receipts? I'm a simple girl.
Yep,
I have a file folder and everything gets stapled to the invoice.
Yes.
That's me.
I love that.
But do we need to scan? Do we need, is there a better way?
I can speak from personal experience and before, this is almost 10 years ago now when I was running a business, mm-hmm. my system was I had a folder for every year for my receipts. And at the end of every single day, I would, empty out my pockets and they'd be in crumples and I'd stick them in that folder. But I also had QuickBooks and I was using QuickBooks Online. So that was my true record keeping. The receipts were there to bail me out if I ever got audited.
Yeah.
Now, I love your approach. That is the exact way to do it. This is before I knew any better.
I don't like it.
Yes.
I do it.
Yeah, it is time consuming. But at the same time, you sleep like a baby at night because you have no worries about that coming back to bite you. I felt okay about it. It would be a nightmare to try to, an IRS agent needs to see this one receipt. I got to dig through a huge folder. But so the IRS's rules, let's just cover kind of complete the loop here on receipts. The IRS's rules are any expense over $75, you're required to save a receipt, and no credit card statements and no bank statements, those aren't receipts. That $75 threshold does not apply to meals and meals expenses. So if you're taking somebody, prospective client out for a meal, you need to save that receipt regardless of the amount, and you need to document what the business conversation was and who you met with.
Okay.
So we're talking about trying to be bulletproof here. So that's the actual rules as the IRS states.
Okay.
Yeah.
So putting their name at the top, mm-hmm. who it was with, mm-hmm. I actually have to say what I spoke about?
Yep. Yep.
Good to know.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. So
yes.
I could do better.
Yeah. Well, and we all can. And, I think we all have to find the system that works for us. And just like financial investing, we have to assess our own personal risk,
right.
What we're comfortable with. And this is the same for taxes. Some people are more comfortable with risk and getting audited and what that looks like for them. Some people have, and it's usually the people that have been audited, they have a deathly fear of getting audited
Absolutely.
Again. And so they try to make themselves bulletproof. And that's I'd rather err on that side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in wrapping up, I want to make sure that I want to make sure I give you the opportunity. If there's
sure.
something I have not thought to ask you,
okay.
that's obvious,
yeah.
chime right in.
Okay.
But I want to make sure that people know what type of services you offer
mm-hmm.
and how to get in touch with you at
sure.
your firm.
Sure. Great. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
So a couple things that I would throw out there, and if you wanted to do a little bit more research, get in touch with a financial advisor, get in touch with whoever it makes sense in your sphere, I would say things that we're talking a lot about right now are Roth IRA conversions.
Okay.
We're in really extremely low tax rates, probably the lowest of all of our lifetimes. So that's an opportunity. Yes, tax changes are sometimes frustrating, but with change comes opportunity, and this is a great one. So if the stock market dips a little bit, make sure you're calling your financial advisor and asking, does it make sense right now for me to convert money to a Roth IRA? Another fun one that doesn't get much press is you can roll from a traditional IRA to an HSA one time in your life. The IRS only lets you do it once, tax-free. So up to
one time in your life.
You know, if the IRS says you only get one shot at this, you know it's good.
How much can you roll into an HSA?
The limit of the HSA. So
okay.
This year it's $7,000.
So you could convert one over.
You got it. This is money that you didn't get taxed on. You're going to convert it, and you're going to, when that money comes out of the HSA, it's going to be tax-free. And so nowhere along the way have we paid any tax on this money, and that's rare. I'm glad you brought that one up. Yeah,
that's a rare one.
Yep.
Okay.
So our firm is Robinson Armstrong. We're in downtown Eagle. My office number is 208-939-1995. And robinsarmstrong.com is our email address. It has all of our contact info on there.
What's your preferred point of contact?
Probably email. I think that's such a great way. I've got an online calendar. I've got ways to send secure emails. All set up in the email, so we can execute a lot of things just by using that. So hazen@robinsarmstrong.com.
Excellent. So I hope it's okay in asking you this.
Please.
You can tell our listeners it's none of their business if you want
to. Sure.
I felt like when we met that I felt your range of services and pricing were very reasonable. So could you give me a top and a bottom range, realizing that the top could be endless, but your average?
Yeah, of course. So our minimum filing fee for an individual, just your good old-fashioned 1040, is $350. And our average, I would say, return fee for an individual client here locally is probably about $450, $500. For an S corporation or a partnership, those run on average about $800. Mm-hmm. Again, predicated on organization and timeliness and all that fun stuff. We do offer payroll and bookkeeping services. So if you're the S Corp owner and you're a one-man shop and you just want us to do your payroll for you, we do that for a lot of clients. It's probably our most common payroll client. And we usually charge, we do zero reports for the first three quarters, and those zero reports cost $125 a quarter. And then we do year-end tax planning and payroll for those S Corp owners. It's usually in that $250 to $350 ballpark.
Okay. Yeah. I realized we didn't even talk about payroll at all.
Yep.
That's a whole other topic.
Another day.
I want to thank you
for
answering all of our questions.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that our listeners found value in that. Again, please feel free to reach out to Hazen if he can help you with your tax preparation, your bookkeeping services, your payroll, or any other guidance that you might need. Thanks, Hazen.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate it. That was fun.